one soul or two?
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome again to another episode of Tea Time Horror Stories, or Tea Time Horrors, whatever whatever tickles your fancy, however you want to call it. We have another episode for you guys today, and today we are covering Myth and Paranormal.
Myth and Paranormal.
Yep, it's the Myth and the Paranormal, and today we have James with us again, and I'm just going to apologize, guys, for last week's audio. It's been a long time since I've touched this mixer, and I forgot to click one single button, and now it just sounds weird. But it's still coming out. Obviously, you guys are already listened to it before you've listened to this one, so my apologies. This time around, we got it down right.
Sorry, not sorry.
What Joe said. But like I said, we have James back with us again. He's going to help us with his reaction, and he gets to experience what our way of covering myths and paranormals. Say hi, James.
Hello, I'm back.
Yeah, you can actually hear him a lot better. Last week, he was a little awkward.
A little distant.
Yeah, you honestly sounded like you were miles away for some reason.
I was miles away.
Mentally. Yeah. I get it. I'm the same way. So, yeah, today, like I said, we are covering the week of the paranormal and the myth. I, myself, will be covering a myth, while Joe's going to be covering a paranormal today. So we're going to do a double hitter.
Yeah.
But first...
Two people.
But first, what are you drinking there, James?
I am drinking a keto chai tea latte. It has 3.7 grams of net carbs. It's a really good keto drink. It tastes pretty good. There's no sugar in it at all. There's no kind of syrups at all. It's all tea bags, which is kind of nice. It tastes really good, too, if you guys like tea.
Is that one tea bag or two?
It's two tea bags,
actually. It's two tea bags, and it has a little bit of whipping cream in it.
And it came to me hot, but I really like my stuff cold, so I waited till we got home, and I put some ice in it. It's pretty good with ice.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, this, as I mentioned before in the last episode, this is my brother, James. He will be mostly tuning in with us on most days from now on. He's going to kind of be my reaction guy. But he's also someone who's on an adventure to lose weight, like myself. He has already successfully lost about 110 pounds on his own, and he is really good with keto. So if you guys have any questions about keto, I'm pretty sure he'll be glad to answer those. I myself, like I said, I'm also there in that process as well, as Joe is forever trying to lose that little ounce of beer belly.
Joe is the smallest one of us.
He really is.
Yeah, we might end up having to change our podcast, though, because we've been drinking a lot of coffee lately. Well, actually, no, you guys are drinking tea.
I'm drinking tea.
Because I'm the only one that's drinking coffee. Now I'm thinking about it, I'm the only one that's drinking coffee right now.
Yeah, but like James, I'm also drinking a chai tea latte. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking actually technically an iced vanilla chai tea latte with a little bit of vanilla cold foam on top, because that is my go-to when it comes to anything tea. So, Joe, again, you want to tell us what you're drinking?
It's a shaken espresso coffee with chocolate almond milk. It's a drink that I've honestly been trying to get from Starbucks for a while now, but honestly, I prefer the one with regular almond milk. The chocolate kind of just throws off the espresso a little bit, but otherwise, it's good. It's good.
Alrighty, so now that we've covered what we're drinking, any kind of like updates that we want to give them? Oh, I'm going to just do this, but by the time this episode comes out, it's already going to pass. Happy birthday to James. James's birthday is coming up.
April 15th, tax day.
Yep, woo! That's how we remember his birthday.
Because the holiday, that one famous holiday.
That one famous holiday that us adults don't really care for. Most of us don't. So, yeah, happy birthday to James, and any other birthdays that we want to celebrate for the month of April besides James?
None that I know of. Old friends from back in the past, but who cares?
I know we have some people coming up in May, so we'll do some birthday shout-outs in May. If any of you listeners have a birthday that's in May or April, just, send us a ping, send us a message, and we'll give a little shout-out to your name as well. So, that being said, now that we've done our shout-outs, any life updates?
Well, we also have to give a little bit of a update, shout-out type of deal for Shannon.
Ah, that's right. I was going to do that to Shannon. At the end of the episode. So, I want to give a huge shout-out to our bestie, one of our guys that comes over almost every weekend. Our token black man. His name is Shannon. Hello, Shannon. If you're listening, this is for you. I also want you guys, I would like to recommend with Shannon, he has himself a podcast as well. And if any of you guys are huge anime fans, like to listen to anime reviews, go check out his podcast. It's called Shiitake Podcast, which is basically, again, they talk about anime. If you like to listen to people talk about anime, give him a listen. It's actually really entertaining.
He actually has a very entertaining voice. He's just fun to listen to.
He really is. He has like a really good entertainer voice, and he's one hell of a singer. Maybe I can try and get him on my podcast one of these days. But yeah, give him a listen. He's really, really good podcast if you like listening to anything that's related to anime.
You could find him on either Apple Podcast or Spotify, and I think those are the primary two. I think there's one or two more other ones that you can find his streaming from.
Yeah, we'll have to confirm that which streaming apps he has, but I know for a fact he has Spotify because that's where I listen to him. He does have Apple Podcasts, and I do believe he has Google Podcasts as well. So just look it up again. It's Shiitake Podcast, and it talks about anime. So if you guys have any time and you want to listen to that, it's pretty cool, and it's pretty funny, actually. So that being said, let's get started. Who wants to go first today?
I could go first. It's been a while, and you went last week, so I can go first.
Let Joe take
you the soloed. Lead. You soloed last week, so I'll take first.
Yep, go ahead.
Cool. So today we're actually going outside of the country. We're going to be hitting England today. More specifically, we're going to be hitting Liverpool, Marysville, I think.
I was in Liverpool for like a day and a half.
Yeah, that must have been fun.
It was okay.
But anyway, yeah, today I am going to be covering the Newsham Park Hospital/Asylum/Orphanage. It's gone through quite a few changes throughout its history, starting from the...
So to be clear, we're doing ghosts today?
One paranormal and one myth. So pretty much the one that I'm going to be covering is going to be a haunted location, and Sam is going to be covering a mythological being or creature, something of the sort.
I'll get there when I get there.
We'll get there when we get there. She will get there when she gets there. So Newsham Park Asylum originally started out as an orphanage. The idea was pitched by two English sailors by the names of Bryce Allen and Ralph Brocklebank. Two of them...
Sorry.
What? Brocklebank?
Brocklebank?
Brocklebank.
What? Does that sound like a brand?
Brocklebank? It sounds more like a bank.
It really does. Like Brocklebank. Like broccoli?
Brocklebank.
Barack Obama?
It's the bank of broccolis.
But anyway, yeah, these two gentlemen, they originally pitched the idea because back during this time, roughly about 1870, I have the dates here, I'll get to that. But anyway, during those times, being a sailor, especially in Liverpool, which was one of the main ports in England, they would go out to sea, and they would sometimes be out at sea for so long that they couldn't really support or provide for their families, and... sometimes they wouldn't really even come back home. And so that would leave a lot of orphans and wives that really couldn't provide for their children during that time. So back in the late... Oh, okay, there it is. 1868, the Liverpool... Yeah, Liverpool, Merseyside, England. During the time, Liverpool was one of the largest ports in England, and sailing was the number one job, pretty much, because it was one of the larger ports. This would leave many widows with no source of income, and many children as orphans, simply because they would be out at sea for months at a time, or... almost years at a time. The plan was accepted by the public at the Mercantile Marine Service Association. The idea was to provide a facility for people who needed assistance, or more so the children who were either orphaned or couldn't be provided for. Okay, so a few years later, in 1869, there were enough funds to rent and open the Liverpool Seamen's Orphanage. Excuse me, Orphan Institution.
I
Liverpool
get it.
Seamen's Orphans Institution. That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is.
Seamen mouthful.
That's what I was getting at. Knee slapper there.
The building was located on Duke Street in. It was located in Duke Street.
In Duke?
On Duke Street.
Man, dude, how did this get so gay?
Well, it is English.
Oh, wow.
So, in 1870, the orphanage was gifted an extra 1.5 acres of land and to build upon for the ever-growing population of orphans within the Newsham Park area.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it gets worse.
Oh, gosh.
So, I'm giving you these sizes. So, it originally started out as like about an acre's worth of land, and then that expanded to about 1.5 acres, and then I think they were gifted... I'll get to that a little bit later. By 1898, the orphanage not only fed and clothed over 500 homeless children, but also opened schools for boys and schools for girls, it was mostly a school, but they did house for both boys and girls during that time.
500?
Yeah.
That's a lot of semen.
Well, it's a lot of semen for that time, yeah.
Man, here I'm thinking of being poor kids, and my sister's still thinking of semen.
But yeah, so it acted as a school for over 500. And
do you think the people, the actual seamen, like the people out in the ocean, they kept tally of like, yeah, I got another one, and like they were trying to keep track of how many of them actually had the kids out there, and were like, yeah, I'm at the top of the scoreboard.
That just reminds me of Bob's Burgers, the episode of the baseball. He's like, yeah, you must be a great father. He's like, and three great husbands.
Oh shit.
I mean, that makes me think about it too, because it's like, if it's 500 kids, how many, I know they were like the main port and a lot of the seamen people came from there and whatnot, and that's where they got a lot of their supplies, but how many women?
Well, you have to also think about, like, overall population too, not just
I mean, yeah, granted, Liverpool is actually kind of big.
Are they just like pooping them out and saying, here, give this to the orphanage?
Right? Like, it just, those numbers are just staggering.
Well, that also has to account, well, during this time, there was a lot of illegitimate children too, so no, there, it's like a lot of prostitutes would have kids and stuff like that also.
That's a huge number.
Yeah, it is a pretty big number, and the number gets bigger too. The orphanage itself actually homes 300 children, which isn't too bad considering the size, but it is a pretty sizable number. By the 20th century, the orphanage was given more funds, and the land was built, excuse me, it was given more funds to build like a swimming pool area or a pool-ish area, or I guess it was kind of vague on what it was, but what it sounded like, it was they made like a man-made pond or something for the actual park itself or something like that. It was kind of vague on the history of that.
So they buried the bodies.
Actually, a lot of bodies were found in that lake.
I knew it.
We'll get there when we get there. There's a reason why it's on the paranormal side.
Exactly. All the creepy stuff happens.
Considering that, you kind of figure, yeah, this place is doing pretty good. It's helping orphans. It's helping school children. It's helping teach children.
But what's the dark side?
The dark side is that if you think about the time frame, this was right at the peak of World War I.
Oh.
So during World War I, unfortunately, that was the arrival of the 20th century and the beginning of the orphan, and that was pretty much the beginning of the problems, or the main problems that the orphanage would start to have. The First World War took a toll on the orphanage. However, King George V, he came by and gave the building a royal status, so they weren't able to use the building for anything other than what it was meant to be used for. So they couldn't tear down the building to create like an army facility or anything like that, or they couldn't replace the children to be part of an army facility.
Right, because what was really popular back in the day, what people used to do is, especially when there was armies or people needed bunkers, or like army people needed bunkers, they would just invade the town and be like, hey, I'm from the army, and people would have to like house them and feed them and stuff like that. We need
this building for military
exactly
reasons.
I guess they couldn't do that with that status. It stopped that from ever happening if it was going to happen.
Yeah, so King George was the one, he pretty much saw what the building was being used for. He felt that it would be better used as the orphanage to help with the citizens and everything like that from there, and the children from there, so he gave it the royal status, quote-unquote, and that prevented the army coming in and being like, yo. We'll get back to more on that a little bit later. So during this time, the orphanage housed over 1,000 children, and the royal title helped to keep the orphanage afloat. So when you think about this,
wait, 1,000 kids from...
1,000 kids were being housed in this one facility.
At a time, or...
At one time. And this is a facility that's roughly about 3 acres large. And when you translate acres to actual like square footage, it's not very much. Like the total square footage is roughly equivalent to about just a little over two football fields.
That's American football fields. That's nothing for 1,000 kids.
Yeah. So you could pretty much guess what the conditions were like in that.
Fucking nasty.
So what were the kids' age range? Were you able to find out?
So during this time, any orphan that was of any age was in there. So it could have been anywhere between 5 or a little bit older than in teenage years.
So and what about infants? Are we talking like babies here, like little bobbins or what?
I wasn't really able to find much information on that, but they did say that some of the young some of the youngest people that were in there were anywhere between 4 and 5 years old.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
That's still insane.
It's still pretty young. Crazy. But anyway, other than the overpopulation within the school itself, the orphanage ran without any issues until World War II broke out. And that's where the main issues happen. Not so much the main issues, but that's kind of where the orphanage pretty much closes itself to any additional children coming in. So during the Second World War, all of the children had to be evacuated because, of course, during this time, Germany was just doing like the Blitzkrieg, and they're flying over and just bombing cities right. just out of nowhere. So they had to be evacuated. And so there was a gentleman by the name of Mr. E.B. Royden, who was one of the royals or one of the more wealthier families during this time. He was actually one of the people who was approached by the English government, and they're asking him, you could either use your mansion or your land or your property as a military facility for soldiers, or you can have the orphans from this particular orphanage being housed at your facility instead. And so he chose the orphans over the military. So I mean one of there's actually an interview that I read about where the lady had described that the guy had ended up taking in the orphans instead of the soldiers because even the children were cleaner than some of the soldiers were, which Ew. Is kind of understandable. But anyway, he took in and housed the orphans during this time. After the Second World War, the orphanage struggled to maintain compliance with laws and regulations. And one of those laws and regulations was that children couldn't be taught or housed with anybody who was older than 11 years old. So anybody who was 11 and younger had to be separated and taught in separate facilities, while everybody 12 and older had to go. It's kind of like elementary school and junior yeah. high and high school and
no,
stuff like that.
That makes sense.
So with all this in mind, with them struggling to maintain compliance with all these new rules and regulations and everything, financial difficulties eventually closed down the orphanage in the middle of 1949. So by 1949, the orphanage officially closes as an actual orphanage, and it was pretty much just an abandoned building during that time.
That's not that long ago.
Yeah. So, but like of course, things were not always happy in the orphanage, as one might guess, with the overpopulation and everything like that. So first off, the space given to the children spanned just over 3 acres, as I mentioned earlier, translating to about 130,000 square feet, which sounds like a lot, but it's mostly, like I mentioned earlier, again, it's just over 2 American football fields, which is not much at all.
That's not much at all.
One of the horrible things that was, or not so much horrible things, but it is kind of bad and unfortunate, but many of the children who had siblings or brothers and sisters were actually separated from each other, and they were kept in separate parts of the area.
Probably because of age and sex.
Well, that was part of it, but it was also because of the way they just ran things for whatever reason. And you would think that they would actually be able to get some more time with each other, but unfortunately, they are only able to see each other for a couple of hours on Saturdays. And on top of that, several more were abused by the matrons and the mistresses and everything that kind of ran the place.
So backhanding them, abuse, like physical abuse,
physical abuse, and okay. it's kind of like the whole like ruler against the knuckle type deal type right. times 10. Right. So and oh. they would do it just for the littlest of reasons. So to make matters worse, one of the corridors was actually dubbed, I know this is gonna sound pretty bad, but it was dubbed the Naughty Boys.
Yeah,
the Naughty Boys corridor. And this is actually one of the areas that that is actually one of the more haunted areas. So when
I'm guessing this is where all the bad guys went.
This was
Take
all
your mic with you.
Yeah, so this was where, pretty much like James had mentioned, this was where most of the children who misbehaved would go to this corridor.
It's where all the Naughty Boys are at. I have a raging clue, oh, and it God. Points that way.
It's always pointing
raging
that way.
Raging clue.
But, yeah. The corridor itself was a hallway with pretty much just closet or cupboards. And pretty much these closets were no more than about 3x3, and not only that, but the ceiling was slanted at about a 20 degree angle from where the about like waist high, a little bit lower than waist high, and any misbehaving children would actually get thrown in there and locked in there, and there was no lights. It was just it was pretty much an equivalent of isolation, and they would get thrown in there and pretty much just forgotten for X amount of time. And it was actually reported that one of the children that I was actually locked in there, young child, somewhere around the age of 5 or 7, they didn't really know exactly his age because he was just kind of one of the ones that they took in off the streets. He cried himself to sleep, or at least the nurses thought he did. They locked him in there and he was crying. He just wasn't having a good time, obviously. You're not going to have a good time. Party in the closet tonight! But anyway, yeah, so... Next morning, when the nurses went to go in to let him out, they found him dead inside the cupboard. So
didn't see that coming.
Yeah. So in this particular area of the orphanage, or now abandoned asylum, it's reported to hear children either laughing or crying. You'll hear or see the doors to the cupboards actually slamming or opening up on their own.
This is where it gets to the paranormal part.
Yeah, at least for the orphanage aspect. And again, this is pretty much the one spot that gets most of the
activity.
Okay, yeah, so this area in particular is reported to have some of the most activity. Paranormal investigators claim to hear laughing, crying, and even screaming, as well as feeling their clothes being tugged at the sleeves or at the their pants and stuff like that. They'll feel people grabbing them either by the hand or just like cold breath on the back of their necks. So they'll pretty much the whole shebang. Every now and again, they'll even say they've even seen children kind of like peeking their head from the corridor and stuff like that, which is pretty creepy. So after a few years of the orphanage being shut down, plans to reopen as a psychiatric hospital began in 1951. So somebody came along and was just like, well, since the facility isn't being used and it's still in pretty good condition, let's open it up as a hospital. And
for crazy people,
mental institute. Yeah, psychiatric hospital for people with mental. See,
this is a good movie already.
Yeah,
I like your dolls.
Actually, let's take a few steps back. Going back to the orphanage, I've actually got something from somebody who was actually there by the name of Phyllis Gillymore.
I was about to say, this happened not that long ago.
Yeah, this was like during World War II and everything like that. So there are some people who still... Not an actual interview from the lady herself, but this was from an article that was written from somewhere. I can't remember the name of the person who wrote the article, but...
Wait, let's hear it.
Yeah. But anyway, she was housed in the orphanage, and she was put in there at the age of 5. She herself wasn't exactly wasn't an orphan, but her father did spend an excessive amount of time out at sea. So she was one of the few who actually still had a parent, but she couldn't provide for herself because she was 5 years old. She couldn't go out to work or anything like that. Her father was a sailor and spent most of his time at sea, and her mother had actually died giving childbirth to her younger sister. Gillymore in the interview stated the war was the best thing that actually happened to the children. It was an absolute relief, she actually claims. All the old harsh masters and mistresses left when they were transferred to that E.B. Royden place's house. And yeah, so once they got transferred over to the other place, they got new teachers who actually cared for them. They actually put the effort into actually teaching them. They got pretty much a good view of the countryside and a lot more space for them to run around in. For her, she says it was like heaven. It was heaven for the kids. Everything was so much easier, and that's pretty much her.
She was saying World War II actually was a blessing for them.
Yeah, simply because the conditions prior to that was so much worse.
Okay,
and she had actually spent 9 years in there.
Holy
shit. At the orphanage, she spent 4 years at the orphanage. So she was 9 when she left.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and another one of the things that she recounts when she was there was on I think it was Wednesdays. She says that they would pretty much just be given slop throughout the entire day for food. So pretty much whatever they had been given throughout the week prior, as far as like meals and everything like that, it would all just be thrown into a bowl and served to them during breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And most of the time, it always consisted of some type of carrots or carrot soup or something. And the thing is that she didn't particularly care for carrots, and in order to make sure that the kids were actually eating this slop, the matron during that time, who actually ran the orphanage, would go around looking over the shoulders of the kids to make sure that they're actually eating it. And if they weren't eating the food, she would take the food away and then give it back to them for dinner.
Oh shit.
Cold. I'm assuming, yeah, that's gross. Yeah,
and to make it even worse, but yeah, Phyllis, what she actually thought of in order to get over this thing with the carrots is she would actually stuff the food in her pockets, and then when they would go out to recess, she would dump it in a grate outside. And this she was doing this for quite a while, until she went out one day to throw her food out, and the matron tapped her on the shoulder while she was there, and the matron forced her to eat everything that she was throwing away in that gutter. But yeah, and that's just another thing to add to pretty much the abuse that they had to go through when they're at the orphanage.
And the cruelty builds. Mm-hmm. Here come the demons.
But yeah, going back, after a few years of the orphanage being shut down, plans to reopen as a psychiatric hospital began, and the idea was pitched in 1951. After renovations were made, Newsham Park Hospital reopened up in 1954. One of the new additions to the building was the mortuary, where paranormal investigators claimed to hear bodies being dragged into and out of the furnace. The furnace area, they'll hear the doors of the gurneys that yep. they pull out and put the bodies in to keep them cool. Mm-hmm. They'll hear those things opening in
freezer doors.
Yeah, the freezer doors. They'll hear them opening up and closing. Oh yeah, so from the conversion from orphanage to hospital, medical equipment was also added. One of these was known as the ECT machine, which was used for electroconvulsive therapy, which is
electroshock therapy, in other words.
Yeah, that's never
it's
good.
It's supposed to be a less extreme version of it, but you're still sending electrical currents through the brain in order to quote-unquote help or treat schizophrenia or other like major depression and stuff like that. So a lot of the patients had to undergo a lot of that information, a lot of that strain too, so that just adds to it. And even now, there's still leftover equipment that has the ETC machines and stuff like that. They were left behind, as well as a few gurneys, steel beds that they were put on when they underwent a lot of this treatment. And a lot of them still have the urine stains from when they were receiving the treatment too.
Well, so yeah, I mean, whoa. Yeah, well, back in the day, ECT or electroshock therapy. So there's ECT and then EST. They're basically the same thing. ECT became it went from EST to ECT when they realized that they have to have a control on how much shock they put into a patient. And even when ECT, which got introduced about 1980s, wasn't a thorough practice. They did not have a whole lot of information on ECT, and they just thought, oh, if we just did it at this level, it will be fine. No, ECT actually still is active to this day. They have a lot more practice on it, and ECT is more common for people who are like bipolar, who can't get out of their manic or depression states. They use it for they still use it for some patients for like schizophrenia and some other stuff. So ECT is still practiced to this day.
I mean, I had some shock therapy when I was younger, but it was not for like mental. I had some.
That's because you like sticking a fork into.
No. I had a bad back. I injured my back when I was younger.
Okay, so that's different. That's electric stim. That's introducing minor electric currents to your body parts, like your muscles, to help relax the area.
ECTs, they put these probes in your head, like right here on your temples, and then they send electric shock therapies. Like if you are sticking your feet, you're like a stupid fork into the plug. in straight to your brain to kind of reactivate your brain.
Oh yeah, I used to do that too when I was a kid.
John did. John used to do that all the time.
John used to do that. Yeah, that John was nuts.
For those who don't know, John is my other brother. I have four brothers, so.
Yeah, she's the only girl.
Yep.
Tough as fuck. Kick your ass. I swear she will.
Yeah. So as we were explaining, the machine was used to induce convulsions by using electrical stimulation to the brain in an attempt to treat bipolar disorder and extreme depression. So that's pretty much what these machines were used for.
Brain to depression.
No, it's supposed to, supposedly.
It's supposed to make you, I don't want to say it's another version of lobotomizing, but it's like a less invasive version of lobotomizing.
One of these days, I will actually cover more on ECT, electric shock therapy, because it was something that was almost recommended to me by my therapist. It's not something that's heavily practiced nowadays and whatnot, so it's kind of a taboo when you talk about it, but maybe one of these days.
Is still used today.
It is still used to this day, but it's well more researched now. Mm-hmm. So
going back to the topic, do you guys, or would you happen to guess on why the hospital ended up getting shut down?
Republicans?
Well, not not Republicans. For a second, I thought you were actually going to get the answer right.
Oh, okay. No, mistreatment, I'm assuming.
I wish.
Oh, wow.
Did they lose public funding?
It was overpopulation, again.
Overpopulation?
Yeah, so due to the overpopulation of the hospital, the owners stopped bringing new patients in 1988 and ran and the hospital ran for an additional 4 years when it ultimately got shut down in 1992.
And at this point 92? It was still
92. So this was just over 20 years ago that this place was shut down as a hospital.
What the fuck?
We were alive in 92.
Yeah, I was born in 88. So that's when they stopped
bringing
people.
Let's just date your age, Joe.
Yeah. So, in the same year of 1992, Rainhill Lunatic Asylum closed down. Guess where they put them?
Oh, shit.
Out in the public.
All the patients from the asylum were transferred to Newsham turning the hospital into an asylum. Among all the people who were actually transferred, it is rumored that Ian Brady was actually among the patients who were transferred to Newsham.
Who's Ian Brady?
He's a psycho. He's a serial killer. I do plan on covering him.
Again.
No wonder you got giddy.
Hey, he was our... Okay, for those of you who've been around with us for the longest time, those of you guys who've been with us since day one, episode one, they know about our hidden, unreported first episode. So when we first recorded, we recorded a episode that eventually got deleted. My computer just deleted it, and we couldn't get it back.
So remember when we went to school? And we were having so many problems with that one audio program?
Yeah.
It was that audio program that we had used for that first episode.
The Apple one?
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. That's the one that I first started using, and it just completely shut down, erased everything we'd done, and I had just edited it and was getting ready to post it.
That happened to us during our...
Yeah. We had to redo everything.
Exactly. So I was so mad because that was supposed to be our first episode ever that came out, and instead the program deleted everything. It got rid of everything.
You guys remember the name of the program?
That's not worth remembering.
It's not. Yeah, it was so long ago. And that first episode, we were referring to it as the shoelace episode.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it, like, scared the living bejeebus out of Yelly.
Mostly because it involved children, too.
It did. It involved a lot of children. So I do plan on covering that episode again. And again, to our people who still have been with us since, like, episode one, or since day one, we've referred to that episode several times. I do plan on covering it now that time has passed by and people don't remember it anymore. I will be covering it again and eventually releasing it, which I'm super excited about.
What was the person's name again?
Ian Brady.
Ian Brady.
And he didn't work alone. He had somebody else with him.
Was he part of the Brady family?
Actually. The bunch.
What? He was part of the bunch?
He wasn't. No.
Oh, Jesus. I was like, what? No!
My life is a lie.
He was married to a lovely lady who had three children of her own, yeah.
I knew it.
Reopening the hospital as an asylum cost £1.6 million, which is roughly about $2,050,000 American dollars, which is roughly around the translation. 90% of the asylum was filled the moment all
for
the
3 acres. Has that size, did the size of the asylum grow in these years or not?
No, during like after the orphanage was out, was done, the only additions that were made was when it was converted into a mental hospital.
How tall were those buildings?
The buildings were pretty tall. I mean, they're usually anywhere between, from what I saw in the in a lot of the photos that I saw online, it had to have been at least 6 or 7 stories high.
Oh, wow.
But even then, I mean, if you're sticking 1,000 orphans in that one, in those like few buildings, it's too much. Yeah. The 5 years, within 5 years, the asylum had actually closed. So it closed its doors indefinitely and has become kind of like an abandoned building in 1997, pretty much leaving all files and everything like that, or actually not the files, but all the equipment, all the medical equipment is still in there to this day. A lot of the records of the patients and everything has been actually closed off to the public, so getting any of that information, you would probably need like special permission from the government in order to actually open it. I unfortunately wasn't able to get any information from those, but Sam is making this face like, I know a way.
I do.
but currently, pre-COVID, the building was reopened.
I love how recent this is. Like, yeah. You get a lot of these crazy ghost stories that are like happened like 50 plus years ago, and Joe's like, nah, yesterday, bro.
Yeah, just a few years ago. But yeah, I mean, quite recently, I think back in 2014, 2015, the hospital, it actually reopened, but it wasn't reopened for anything other than pretty much a tourist attraction for Ooh. Ghost hunters and everything like that. And this was pre-COVID, pre-shutdown and everything like that. People were actually able to go inside to do tours. They did tours of the entire grounds. They did everything from doing night tours to day tours to doing seances. And they actually did something that James will never do, and frequently I will never do either, which was Sam.
Ouija boards.
Yes, they actually did Ouija board sessions in this place. And one of the places that they love taking people to is that
the sassy boys.
Yeah, the naughty boys corridor.
Sassy boys.
But
potato is the same thing.
But yeah, so they actually like taking people throughout the entire grounds, which includes a bell tower, which is rumored to have somebody who hanged themselves.
Hung themselves
because past tense.
Yes.
Yeah, past tense. Sam's the English major here.
Not really, but I try.
No, it's her best friend, really.
But anyway, yeah, she. It is rumored that somebody had actually hung themselves in the bell tower. There's also a chapel in there, which is also said to be really haunted.
Most chapels are.
You're reported to hear doors closing, opening, closing, slamming, whichever. Some of the items like the pews and everything you are heard to be scraping across the floor. Voices, obviously, disembodied voices, footsteps, all that whole shebang. Shadow people are also said to be seen in the chapel also.
Mm. Everyone loves a shadow person.
Not really.
Not when you have nightmares of them. Going back to some of the reports, it's kind of really difficult to find actual death certificates and everything from there.
Okay. I was going to ask if it has, you know, in a lot of paranormal things that really catch people's attentions, like some family or something drastic happens after all the craziness has happened. Like, as for instance, in Poltergeist, how the kid was like taken away forever. Has anybody like disappeared on the premises at all?
Not necessarily, but they have like found bodies on the premises.
So people who've committed suicide?
Some people who have committed suicide, some people who've just found dead in the lake that were on the property. Creepy. So going back to that, there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 about 5 people who were actually found in the lake, or at least reported, actually recorded. That isn't to say that there are actually more people who were found, but yeah, starting back way back in 1878, there was a person named William Holland. He was found on the lake when the ice had thawed. So somebody, he was either killed and thrown inside the lake during the, like right before winter, before the lake froze over. And when the lake thawed out, his body like surfaced and they were able to find his body. Yeah, in 1880 there was an unidentified man who was also found in the lake with a slit throat with the razor. Yeah. With the razor was actually found in his jacket pocket, so it's like somebody had cut his throat, put the murder weapon in his pocket and threw him into the lake.
Or he did it himself.
Who the hell's gonna kill him? Never mind.
You saw that movie.
1891, there was another unidentified man who was found again in the lake who had died of unknown causes. But, I mean, if you're found in the lake...
It's slowly starting to sound like crazy kids cutting people's throats.
I mean, it could have been a dumping ground.
It could have been. The park itself is pretty large, and the orphanage or the building itself only encompasses a small part of it. 6 years later, in 1897, Florence Hensford was also found in the lake of unknown causes. So a nurse was actually found dead in one of the staircases of the actual place. And a few days prior, she was complaining, or not so much complaining, but she was reported to have been paranoid about hearing voices, about hearing disembodied footsteps, and she claimed to have seen like ghosts, not ghosts, but full body apparitions. She went to go check and investigate a child that she thought she saw on the premises, and when she saw, I think it was in the Naughty Boys corridor, she went to open up the door and there was nobody in there, and then a few days later she ended up dead on the staircase.
Wow. Yeah. On the staircase or in the staircase?
On the staircase. Oh. So I mean, it could have been, but then again, there are also reports of people feeling like they're being shoved or pulled by unknown forces. So,
and they said she died of unknown causes.
Unknown causes, but they did find her on the floor. One of the stairwells. So it's kind of like, was it an accident? Did something supernatural happen to her when she died?
One of the Naughty Boys.
There was a reason why he was in that corridor.
Naughty, naughty, naughty boy.
But yeah, so throughout the entire place, some of the activities that people claim, or a lot of the ghost hunters who have gone there claim to hear disembodied screaming, crying, and sometimes even laughing. Growling has also been reported to be heard. During the tours, people claim to see everything from white mist to full body apparitions from both children and patients from the asylum. They also claim to see shadow people. And this is actually kind of funny. A horse is also said to be seen passing through one of the wards on the ground. So it's pretty funny. But people also report being pushed or pulled. Others claim to feel breathing on the back of their necks. Tables have been seen being pushed across the floor, and doors have been reported to being seen slammed or shut or open on their own. Newsham Park is currently listed as a Grade 2 listed building, which is represented as a historical landmark.
So it ain't going anywhere.
Nope. So it's been around since the late 1800s. Late 1800s.
Now it's a haunted museum,
and it's pretty much it's a tourist attraction at this point. Shit. So people, oh, Sugar Cube. Fun fact: the new Batman movie was actually filmed there. In one of the scenes of the new Batman movie with Edward Cullen. Robert Pattinson. The new Batman movie was actually parts of the movie were actually filmed there.
Wait, which new Batman movie though?
The new Batman movie with Robert Pattinson, the sparkly vampire.
I like that. Like I said, my favorite part about it is like a lot of these creepy ancient stories are literally creepy and ancient 1800s, 1700s, and then the building has been touched, and then you know a family rents out the house and the family dies.
This isn't The Haunting,
but you know this is like something quite literally that closed 20 years ago, and now it's even a tourist attraction.
Yeah,
I
would go.
People who are skeptical, like, I'm kind of skeptical, but I know, I just don't want to fuck with it, and it's really hard for me to say that I would, because a big piece of me says I really
want. Hail to the nah.
A really big part of me says hail to the now.
Alrighty, so it is my turn, guys, to cover. So Joe did a wonderful job in covering the paranormal side.
I apologize for the editing. It's going to be a lot.
I mean, it was your first time back, right? So...
No, it's an issue that I've had ever since the beginning.
Anyways.
Goddamn those naughty boys.
Those naughty boys.
Naughty boys. Alrighty, so it is my turn. Like I said earlier, I will be covering a myth today. So like we mentioned before, and we're going to keep up with this, we're just going to put myth and paranormal together. So that way it's 1 week of myth and paranormal and then another week of murder. So stay tuned for next week. I actually have a big surprise for you guys next week for what I'm going to be covering. I'm super excited about it, and I can't wait to get to that. But for the time being, let's cover what I'm going to be covering today. So I chose something pretty easy, something at least most people have heard once or twice in their life. It is the myth of the Bell Witch. Has any of you guys heard about the Bell Witch?
I've seen the movie.
I've heard recently on a movie I saw last night, almost quite literally, there are bell spirits that you use to contact
spirits. Not bell spirits, but you can use bells as a way of contacting spirits.
I found that out last night, but that's about it.
Alrighty, so the Bell Witch is, it's more so covering like the Bell Witch haunting than anything else, so it's kind of...
Also, it's more like a location?
Yeah, it's kind of a mix between a paranormal and a myth, because it's kind of like a two-parter on this one. So
it's going to sound really familiar for all you 90s kids.
Yes, it is.
For 90 kids?
Yes.
90s kids.
That's us.
Gen X.
I get it. I'm just trying to figure it out.
So, let me get into this, all right? So, the Bell Witch, or the Bell Witch Haunting, is a legend from the American South. So, several popular movies have been made of legend, but are mostly going to cover the lore of this one here. So, there's a lot of movies that cover the Bell Witch. We're going to try and cover more, not really focus a lot on the movie aspect. We're going to focus more on the legend part of this. So, as I mentioned earlier, the Bell Witch is a legend from the South United States and centers in the 19th century Bell family of Northwest Robinson County.
Wait, Bell family?
Yeah.
My best friend's name is...
I know!
Sean Bell. Oh, man. I knew his house was haunted. Dude, I have some crazy... Oh,
this takes place in Tennessee. So unless he's
from... Yes. Yes, he's very white.
Well, we know this.
His neck is red.
Literally. Oh, my God. How white he is. His neck is red.
So Farmer John Bell Sr. and his family lived along the Red River.
What was his name?
John.
I thought you said Sean. I was like, this is getting really close.
No. Farmer John Bell Sr. and his family lived along the Red River, which is current day would be near the town of Adams. According to the legend, in 1817 to 1821, about a five-year span, the local area, mostly the families, were under attack by an invisible entity, aka a spirit or a demon. These spirits had the ability to physically attack and change the environment. It was also able to speak and shapeshift.
What?
Yes. So some even say the spirit had been clairvoyant and capable of traveling long distances at super speeds, or have the ability to be at multiple places at one time.
What was the time period again?
1817 to 1821.
In the South?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
The deep south.
So, it's yeah, the very and shrooms, deep people. South.
It's
so.
Moonshine and shrooms. That is.
Believe me, when I was reading this, I was just kind of like, I guess it's that time. So, in 1894, Martin Ingram, who was a newspaper editor, published the Authenticated History of the Bell Witch. This book is the Bible when it comes to the Bell Witch among the researchers. But in some modern times, a lot of skeptics have regarded this work and effort as a work of historical fiction or fraud. The book was said to contain actual events that happened during the time. I have not read the book. I actually have it saved in my Amazon.
We need to buy it.
What is it called?
The Authenticity.
Or
Authenticated History of the Bell Witch.
There you go.
As you can tell, I have a hard time with that word. I don't know why, I just do.
You have problems with all kinds of words.
You said Bell Witch, right?
Yes. So when everyone hears the Bell Witch, they think of the Bell Witch Caves, which that's located in Adams, Tennessee, which is not that far away. Supposedly, there's no relation. Some people say that there is a relation because the demon is said to be able to travel. So they say maybe the demon has something to do with what's going on in Adams, Tennessee. Apparently there's no relations really of the Bell Witch Cave that is located in Adams, Tennessee, near where the Bell Farm once stood. It is about 500 feet long. The place is privately owned and is a tourist attraction, kind of like with yours. Fuck?
And there's a movie on it, actually.
Yeah, there's tons of movies about it. So the place is privately owned, but tours are given during the summer months for those who are interested. Supposedly, the caves is where the witch had fled. And legend goes, quote, young Betsy Bell and some of her friends had gone to explore the cave. While they were there, one of the boys crawled into the hole and became stuck. A voice called out, I'll get him out. The boy felt hands grasping his feet, and he was pulled out of the hole. the hole. The Bell Witch, still invisible, then gave the young explorer a lecture of recklessness cave exploring. End quote.
Of course.
What?
It was an accident.
So supposedly the witch helped this young boy get out by grabbing him by his feet and pulling him out.
Does the witch also do bad things or just good things?
It's like a mix of both.
Like a Baba Yaga.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Makes you think if what are the origins of this story? You said it's from the far south?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. And then on top of that, she had the time to give him a lecture for being reckless. So we're going to talk more about this book that we were talking about Martin Ingram. So everything you're going to hear are accounts from the book. So this book is, like I said, is Bible when it comes to paranormal hauntings or paranormal investigators when it comes to wanting to cover the Bell Witch and the Bell Witch legend. So again, everything you're going to hear is from accounts from the book. So Martin claims that the name of the poltergeist, you guys know what a poltergeist is, right?
Yeah,
of course not.
So for the... Thanks, James. So for those who don't know what a poltergeist is, it's a type of ghost or spirit that is responsible for physical disturbance such as loud noises, objects being moved or destroyed. This may be covered in another episode of what a poltergeist really is, but let's not get into a lot of details right now.
You ever seen that movie?
Mm-hmm. Right? For those who want to know, watch the movie. Anyways, so the name of the poltergeist by Martin's counts was named Kate.
Why Kate? Why specifically Kate? Was that just an ex-girlfriend of his?
I have no idea. He just named it Kate. This came from when the entity claimed to be old Kate Bates.
Kathy Bates?
I'm sorry, Bats. Cat Kate okay. Bats. Not Kit.
I wonder if that's where Kathy Bates got her pseudonym.
Right, so she was known as the old Kate Bats Witch, which would seem to respond to the name when it was called. So whenever they were trying to get a hold of the poltergeist, all they would have to say is, little Katie or Kate, come on out. And apparently she would respond to it.
Oh, shit.
So, maybe it was just her being pissed off at the fact that they kept calling her Kate.
Right?
She's like, it's not my name,
goddammit. It's Catherine, damn it!
I am not your ex-girlfriend, Kate, okay? Call me something different. So,
okay, Karen.
Most of the activity centered on the Bell's youngest daughter, Betsy, and her father. Kate expressed major displeasure when Betsy became engaged to a local man named Joshua Gardner. Supposedly, the hauntings began in and around 1870s when John Bell witnessed a strange creature resembling a dog appear. So Bell fired at the dog-like creature, but the bullet went straight through and then disappeared. So they also had a son named John, and apparently one of these days while he was out there like tilling his crops and whatnot, they saw this huge bird. Not a normal size bird. We're talking about a bird that was like three or four sizes this like times the size of a regular bird. So when he approached this unknown bird, it flew off the fence and nothing he had ever seen before. So not only did they see a mystery dog, they saw a mystery bird.
I was going to say Odin because that's both Hugin and his wolf.
It could. I mean, maybe. So they don't know. Remember, these are all accounts that came from the book. So let's see. So Betsy, the daughter, observed a girl in a green dress swinging from the limbs of an oak tree. Dean, a slave of the Bell's family, reported being followed by another large black dog on the evening he visited his wife.
It's the Grimm. He's going to die.
There you go, Harry Potter!
So quickly, the activity moved to the Bell's household with knockings being heard on the walls, the doors, and all over the house. The family reported to have heard a gnawing coming from the bed, invisible dog fights, and chains being dragged along the floor. John Bell started to experience paralyzing of his mouth as well, so he would start saying, and then all of a sudden he couldn't talk anymore. The family reported that the activity was getting worse as the sheets would be pulled from their bed while they were in it or next to it. Then Kate upgraded to starting to pull their hair and started to scratch the children with particular emphasis on Betsy, who was slapped, punched, pinched, and stuck with pins.
Oh, jeez.
Yes.
That's kinky. Especially the hair pulling.
Dude, once the blood... God, just stop.
Jesus, like,
yeah, it's not.
So, historian Albert Vergen Goosepester wrote, quote, the freaks it performs were wonderful and seemingly designed to annoy the family. It would take the sugar from the bowls, spill the milk, take the quilts from the bed, slap and pinch the children, and then laugh at their discomfort of its victims, end quote.
Dude, that sounds like a really sick spirit, dude. He spilled the fucking milk.
He spilled the milk. He spilled the tea.
Yeah, he probably would hide a controller nowadays.
Imagine this happening nowadays. Where the hell is my controller? What did people do to my Switch?
Exactly. Oh my God.
My phone. I lost my phone. Where's my phone?
Oh, this spirit really knows how to hit the soft spots.
Right. So, yeah, he was really, like, there was no hose barred. This thing was really going after the kids, especially Betsy. Let's see. So, not sure why, but they invited their friend. They invited their friend over. They're like, you need to witness this yourself. So, that way people don't think we're crazy. The friend's name was James Johnson.
Oh, boy. James Johnson. That's, yes, that's a white guy's name.
So yeah, they invited their friend James Johnson over to help. I don't know what title he holds, but they invited him over for the night, and during the night he did experience some phenomenons as everyone else. That morning he told the Bells that it was a spirit from the Bible. It wasn't long until he told the whole town, and then the whole town wanted to know what was going on with the hauntings as well. So many people came and tried to speak with the spirit, and the spirit always replied. So this is why everyone said that this is the book had all these accounts from everyone who'd came in from the town to try and investigate. All of them had a story to tell. So many people came and tried to speak with the spirit, and the spirit replied. In one instance, someone asked, "Who are you and what do you want?" The voice answered, "I am a spirit, and I was once very happy, but have been disturbed." The spirit offered diverse explanations on why it had appeared, trying to tying its origins to the disperse of a Native American burial mound located on the property.
That's highly specific.
Yes. So apparently it came from...
I'm wondering if this is just somebody being like, this is what I heard, and this is what I think I heard.
Right.
And
it sounds like someone trying to make up a story.
I mean, it could have been. I guess people were bored back then.
Well, kind of. But again, this seems like way too specific.
But it got so specific that they gave him coordinates to a location where the Indian burial ground was. But this sent Drew Bell and Bennett Potter, another friend of theirs, on a failed treasure hunt. While on the hunt, the spirit appeared two different times, 13 miles away from each other.
As a bird or a wolf or both?
It didn't say. It just said that it appeared to them. It seemed the spirit was well acquainted with the biblical text and appeared to enjoy religious arguments. Apparently, the spirit was very fond of the gospel. So it would have gospel arguments with them all the time.
Thank you, Jesus.
Preach it, Jesus. Oh, so
that would get the
praises. I mean, I guess not all spirits are bad, right?
So, I mean, we learned that last night. Not all spirits are bad. Oh my God. So, another incident that happened, John Johnson, a son of James.
Is this the same John Johnson?
Yes. Okay. So, well, there's James Johnson. Oh, okay. And then there's James John Johnson. So, another incident that happened, John Johnson, the son of James Johnson, came up with a plan to try and fool the spirit. No one would know the answer to this question outside of the family or really himself. He asked, what would his Dutch step-grandmother, who lived in North Carolina, would say to the slaves if she thought they did something wrong?
How much would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck
one? It really was. It's kind of like a tongue twister.
Dude, John Johnson and James Johnson, that twisted me up.
Right? Like, someone really liked their Johnson name, so like, let's rename Johnston. Let's give him John, because we want two first names there. Speaking loudly and in a completely different voice, an accent replied with, "Hut tut, what has happened? What has happened now?" They were completely thrown off, and the spirit had begun speaking in an English accent, sounding just like his step grandmother.
Whoa!
Yeah. So the following morning, he was awoken by the spirit sounding just like his parents, and later he would learn the same day and time the spirit woke his parents with the sound of his voice. John then ran away and never returned back to the Bellwitch house. At the time, people would report the spirit would be quite nice and very quaint, actually.
His name is Casper.
Casper the Friendly Ghost, except this one is Kate the Friendly Ghost.
Oh my God.
So the spirit was very fond of Lucy, John Bell's wife, and once she said it was the most perfect woman to walk on earth. The witch would give Lucy fresh fruits and say hymns to her and show John Bell Jr. a measure of respect.
She sounds kind of like a lesbian ghost there.
She's oh my
like,
God. Yes. I'm in lesbians with the yeah. ghost.
It's a naughty girl.
Oh my first we had naughty boys, and now we have naughty girls. That's wonderful. So
I'm liking this episode.
Well, on the other hand, even though Lucy, who was John Bell's wife, okay, so John Bell claimed that the opposite. The wife always had good experiences with the ghosts.
I bet she did.
Let's be honest there. So, but John got nothing but bad experiences with this ghost. So again, let's be honest.
See, now it's starting to sound like the ghost on Ouija.
Again, so on the other hand, John Bell Sr. claims that the witch would kill him one day. She would do a lot of chanting. She'd curse him. She'd send threats of all kinds to him. It was reported that John Sr. was poisoned at one time, and it happened sort of. So John passed away. John Sr. Bell had passed away in October 1820, and in the morning of December 19th, he failed to wake like he normally would. When his family noticed he was still sleeping, they attempted to wake him, but nothing happened. John Jr. went to the medicine cabinet and noticed his medicine and noticed it was gone and replaced with a strange vial in its place. No one claimed to have replaced the medicine with the vial. Once they tested the vial on a cat, they learned that it was highly poisonous.
Oh my god, that poor cat.
It was right. The wife.
Right? That's what I'm saying. That's she was in love too. With the spirit, yeah, so...
But not only that, it's like, how do you mistake your normal bottle of medicine with an unknown bottle?
Hold a second, does the guy go missing?
Which one?
John.
No, he never woke up. He was in bed and just never woke up.
He just died?
He just died, so...
See, you gotta watch Ouija now.
So he later passed away on December 20th. Kate was quiet up until after the funeral. After the grace was filled, the witch began singing loudly and joyously. This continued until all friends and family left the gravesite. So the Bell Witch then left the household and said she would return in 7 years, which she did. John Bell Jr. stated she did come back and would talk to him and tell him prophecies of the futures, including the Civil War, World War I, and World War II. The ghost said that it would appear in 107 years later. Let's talk about that. So the prophecy was reported by May 1903, which would have been the time, that the witch would return on the Bell family arrival in Tennessee. It was reported no one cared. Or even was concerned about the return of the Bell Witch. It was later reported that nothing actually ever happened and no one reported seeing anything or hearing anything.
Well, that long without being... It's kind of like if you feed it power, it's gonna happen.
So, yeah, I mean, that's essentially it. But even... So the family still owns the property. So Charles Bailey Bell, a grandson of John Bell Jr., published a book and put together all the stories that he was told to him as a boy, including some things mentioned above. He also stated that the witch would return in 1935, 107 years after the last visit to the Bell family. In 1937, there was reports of random events from the new owner, Louise Grayson from the Bellwitch Cave. He reported hearing unexplained noises coming from the inside of the cave. Louise described the sounds as something rubbing against a house, a paper-like object that flew out of the door and re-entered through a side door, a faint music being heard from a piano. So it started it started happening again.
Interesting.
Except she was only like a couple years late.
Could you imagine?
Probably got snagged on something.
Right. She probably fell asleep and forgot to set the alarm for 107 years. It was like 110 years.
Well, maybe she took into account like daylight savings time and stuff like that, so it like was pushed back a couple years.
That's actually not a bad idea. That's actually not a bad way to look at it, because the...
So, yeah. So, in 1937, so she didn't take into account daylight savings.
See? Maybe so she wasn't late.
Fucked shit up.
It fucked shit up so much that she was late by a couple of years. So, yeah, because it happened in... It was supposed to happen in 1935. She didn't arrive until 1937, so she was kind of off by, like, 2 years.
That's kind of cool and creepy at the same time.
Right. So on July 1937, a group of people were having a wiener roast in a rock quarry near the cave.
It's my best type of roast.
No comment.
It was a weenie roast. So they were having a weenie roast in a rock quarry near the cave and were joking about the legend and then saw a figure of a woman sitting on top of the cliff over them. They freaked out and ran. She wasn't eating a weenie. She was just sitting there watching them. They freaked out and they ran. On November 1965, a rocking chair that was said to belong to Charles Wilton, a Bell descendant, was in an attic shop. It was not for sale, but the customer sat down in the chair and rocked in it for some time and got the feeling that it had supernatural abilities and felt weird in it. 2 weeks later, the customer daughter visited the home of Mr. Adams and said that her mother had not been the same since coming to the shop and sitting in the chair. It was reported that the person's mother heard a voice and the voice told her to stand up and look around. You'll find something of much value. One day while her mother was out and about, she had a car problem. She could not fix the problem and started to walk to the nearest town. And while walking, she saw a turned kettle. Turning it over, she found a pearl bucket in the grass. I'm sorry, a pearl bucklet? And the jeweler estimated the bucklet to be 160 to 200 years old. They couldn't find the value, but I'm sure it was worth a lot. So in 1986, writer David Gerald and photographer Bill Wilson were given permission to sleep in the cave overnight. So while in the first cave room, they heard a noise from deeper in the cave, not more than 30 yards from them. They also heard an unwavering groan, repeated again with greater volume and accompanied by several loud thuds. Pretty sure someone was having fun in there. Okay, so when it began a third time, the men retreated to the gate entrance. They explored the wiring to the light, looking for a reason for the noise. They went back to the first cave room, but heard a rumble near the entrance. Walking back to the entrance, they discovered the rumble noise was from a jet. As they reached the gate, a loud, high-pitched steam came from inside the cave. They both left without spending the night. So all these noises start coming from the cave that freaked the fuck out of them.
Pansies.
You would have been the same.
First one.
So in 1987, H.C. Sanders, owner of a nearby gas station, reported he ran out of gas one night near the Red River across from the Bellwitch Caves. He began to walk toward the town when a rabbit came out of the woods and began to follow him.
A rabbit?
A rabbit.
That guy's been drinking.
Sanders walked faster, but the rabbit kept pace, even as he broke into a run. After a mile, Sanders sat down on a log to catch its breath. The rabbit hopped up to the other side of the log, looked at him and said, "Hell of a race. Hell of a race we had there, wasn't it?"
It sounds drunk. He must have been on something.
I know.
Some type of hallucinogen or something.
When I read that online, I could not stop laughing. But apparently there's a bunny out there that follows people and talks to them. So,
mushrooms and shrooms?
So, again, the rabbit hopped up on the other side of the log, looked at him and said, "Hell of a race we had there, wasn't it?" So skeptics, right? There's a lot of skeptics when it comes to the Bellwitch. They just think this was all for fortune, for money. So now with every story comes skeptics. According to Bell Redford, the Bellwitch story is an important one for all the paranormal researchers. It shows how easily legend and myth can be mistaken for fact and real events, and how easily the lines are blurred when sources are not checked. Radford reminded readers that the burden of proof is not on skeptics to prove anything, but rather for the people to prove their claims. Other claims that there are no need to support paranormal activity until there are evidence that the story was true. Joe Nichols has written that many of those who knew Betsy suspected her as a fraud. She supposedly really enjoyed the attention that would come from it. Joe stated that the stories suspiciously just sounded too convenient. It just didn't seem, how to put it this way.
Kind of seemed far-fetched.
Yeah.
How specific the ghost responses were to
exactly,
certain things.
Exactly. Yeah. So they thought that the whole town was into it, too, because remember how they said people would come and they would
say... Everybody would have some sort of experience.
Exactly. So they all thought that they were fraud. Joe stated that the story suspiciously was like an example of the poltergeist faking syndrome, which someone, typically a child, caused the mischief. So there is something called the poltergeist faking syndrome, and it's basically a kid with an overactive imagination.
Or like a shared delusion or something like that.
So that was us.
So I do want to visit the Bellwitch caves myself. I think it would be pretty cool. We know if the Bellwitch is real or not.
This is down south, so it's pretty
doable. Tennessee. Yeah, so, but a lot of weird things happened here that are not explained, and I'm sure someone out there can figure it out. I will leave it to you guys to decide whether the Bellwitch thing is just, you know, something that's made up, something that get people's attention, or if it's actually real. If anyone here has ever experienced anything about the Bellwitch, please share your experiences with me. Write me an email, send me a DM or something, and I really want to read about it or hear about it, because again, it is a tourist attraction that's available during the summers, so you can go out there, you can actually go to the housing, to the caves and all that area, and figure out whether the Bellwitch is real and she'll talk to you.
I want to race this rabbit.
Right,
what color was the rabbit?
White.
It was white.
I think it was white.
I wonder if it had red eyes.
Can I dress as a turtle?
What?
Can I dress as a turtle?
Yes, Joe, so you can race the rabbit.
Bet you Joe's going to win, too. Rabbit's going to be like, hell of a race, huh?
Hell of a race, wasn't it there, huh? Hey. So that is my Bellwitch. Pretty short, pretty simple. It's here, I don't want to say locally, because it's not local for us. But yeah, so I thought that was a pretty interesting tale. I thought it was, you know, I've heard about it several times, and I wanted to just cover it. There are tons and tons of books about the Bellwitch. I mean, James just looked it up now, and he saw on Audible that there were, like, thousands of books on it.
Yeah, there's quite a bit.
And there's also a lot of movies based off of The Bell Witch, too.
Yeah, one recently in 2008, I think it said, or 2007.
Yeah, and then there were some people who claim that The Bell Witch is the same thing as The Blair Witch, which there's no relation. There's no relation to it whatsoever. But, yeah, that's The Bell Witch. What do you guys think?
I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was pretty funny.
I thought it was very comedic.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It sounds like this ghost is really cheeky and gives a lot of attitude and favors the female.
Right, just favors over, the females just a wee bit. Just a wee bit there.
Just a wee bit.
Alrighty, so that is it for today, guys. I'm glad you guys stuck around with us and stay tuned for another episode. Again, next week we're going to be covering Murder. I'm not going to tell which guys is because I want it to be a surprise. I'm pretty excited about it. Kat, please do not turn off my laptop right now. So yeah, I'm pretty excited for next week's episode. I hope you guys will be excited as well. And again, we're going to do a shout out again. Happy birthday to James. You're going to get one more year older. And a big old shout out to Shannon, our friend Shannon, and his podcast. Again, check him out. It's for anyone who's a huge anime fan. It's called Shiitake Podcast. They're on Spotify, Apple, and any other place that you guys really play your podcast on. If you guys want to send any personal stories to us, whether it's paranormal or murder, please just send it our way. We're on most social media, or pretty much all social media. We have Twitter, we have Facebook, we have Instagram. You can send me either DM or you can email us at teatimehorrorstories@gmail.com. And until then, stay spooky, y'all.
Have a good night.
Peace out.
Bye.